as the kiddos were walking out, one of the other couple said, "You did our wedding too." And they have two children. And so I didn't know what to say. I thought of the response since then, which is, give it time. And then Chris, not to embarrass him, he walked back and said, "If you ever do my wedding, I want you to do a good job, but maybe not that good of a job." Makes me think of a joke I heard recently at the chamber breakfast. Bob Carlyle, who wrote the most precious song about his daughter, Butterfly Kisses, right? Like that sweet moment where she flicks him with her eyelashes and vice versa when they go to bed. And it's like one of those sickening, sweet, kind of like, you know, romanticized version of parenthood. and there's that side, of course, to it too. But he was asked in an interview if he was going to write a song for his son and ask what that would be called. And he said the name of that song would be "Get Down Off of That." So as a church, I hope we're here for both sides of that equation for you parents. Today I want to talk to you about our desire and what we hear from Scripture, God's desire to put our world back together again. And sometimes to express a thought well, I was trying to figure out how to get into this. To express a thought well, you really almost have to go to the arts, to poetry, to encapsulate, to say something that's hard to say. So I thought I might begin that way this morning with a poem that you might know pretty well. Here it goes. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. And all the king's horses and all the king's men. I think there are two forces at work in the world. And this is maybe a worldview thing, an anthropology thing, whatever, that we might use as a starting point. The forces at work in the world, one of which is to tear things apart. And the other are the forces that are at work to put things back together. And as the people of God, we are being called, in a series on how God is calling, we are being called to join God in the work of putting the world back together again. Now, this is the call of God. It's the purpose of God. It's the hope that we have as the people of God, that kind of thing is even possible when we're not sure the world can be put back together again. Our dream as the people of God is and always must be this: of a world coming back together. So this is our call, of course. There are forces at work in us, not just out there, but in here, to do both those things, right? The forces at work in us that are at work to tear us apart, and the forces at work in us to bring us back together. And so this work of putting the world back together always, always, always begins first and foremost inside of each one of us, saying yes to that work of God in us, and then joining a community of people who've also said yes to that putting back together work, so that together we can be put back together for the sake of the world. This is the goal, this is the dream, this is the call. God is calling us to join in the putting back together people, to become, as a part of our identity, the putting back together people, and to join God in putting back together our world. On our best days, this is what we do as the people of God. The very definition of religion, the word itself, sort of gets a bad name, I think, and maybe for good reason. But the word itself comes from two words, re and ligament, religio, putting things back together. This is what God is doing. And on our best days, we join God in that work. This is the call of the prophets of the Old Testament, the prophets of Israel. And we get a sense from them that this call to God's work and to specifically to justice is a sense of, it really comes out of who they are. That from Abraham, who was called to be a blessed to be a blessing, the people of God understood that there's this twofold thing going on, where God is at work in us to be at work in others. They understood that, and so we do as a part of their story, that they were people who originally were slaves and who were saved from injustice itself to be the people of God. that out of that, God had given them a vision of a world coming back together, a kingdom that reaches down to the lowest of the low and then pulls everybody up. And the truest test for them of whether things were going well, whether God was getting in there, whether they were responding to the call of God, the truest test for them was always to do this. Go ask the poor people. Go ask the people at the bottom, how's it going? And that's the answer that you get from them is the answer we get for everybody. They are the canary in the coal mine of the people of God. If the poor people, if the low people, if the marginalized people, if the oppressed people, if the foreigner, if the stranger is doing well, then everybody's doing well. But if they're not doing well, if they're being exploited and abused, this is a bad sign for all of us. And this is what gets the prophets all worked up. The prophet Amos, who we heard today, and maybe you know that passage in part from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who quoted it as well, that passage comes from one of the earliest of the prophetic messages. We're in this series, if you've been here a while, the last few weeks, you know this, if this is your first time. We've been talking about the prophets for a few weeks as we're going through the whole Bible and hitting some key points along the way. But the prophet Amos was early on. He's one of the first prophets and sort of a groundbreaking voice in pointing out to God's people the canary in the coal mine thing. It's not over yet, but there are some signs that this is not going well. And it has to do with their treatment of the poor or their ways of enacting injustice rather than justice. And this call, this alarm that he sounds was for them to wake up. In a sense, the main reason God's people are failing is because they have disconnected the love of God and love of neighbor that Jesus would one day speak about. So when God calls people to do justice, or when the prophets call them to do justice, there's something really important to remember. For us, when we think about justice, and I've been working through this a lot in the last couple weeks, we mean a couple things. We tend to think, as Americans, you know, all these years later, of some legal code or an ethical code or a moral code that guides us. That's just kind of how history has taught us to think about it. We also think about justice as something that needs to happen after something bad has happened, right? So when do we say we need justice? Is for someone, maybe through the court system, maybe through whatever system, to be brought to justice after something has gone wrong, after they have done an injustice. And that's sort of what the prophets mean. But for the prophets, justice is always a callback to an understanding of their relationship with God, that this really is a relational thing. There's no code necessarily. I mean, there are the Ten Commandments. There are rules and laws. But when it comes down to it, it's something more fundamental than that. So yes, there are rules. But ultimately, this comes down to relationship. And the relationship part is much more important than the rule part because it calls to a higher standard or to a greater responsibility. And so here's this weird thing that happens in the Old Testament. When we talk about worship, you know, sort of praying and singing and sitting in church like we do, and acts of ritual, that's one side of that relationship. Because it's about relationship with God. It's an orientation toward God. But in the same way, so is justice. It's also a relational concept. So how we treat our neighbor, how we live our lives, how this gets down on the ground and into the nitty-gritty and into the dust and into the dirt, that's just as important. The two things are actually one thing. They're two sides of the same coin. To love God and love neighbor, they just go together. It's sort of like two links in a chain that just keeps going, link after link after link. One leads to the other, back to the other, and to the other again. Both worship and justice are about the same thing. They're about reorienting our lives to put God at the center of them, about reprioritizing our lives so that we remember and don't forget what's important and minimize what's not important. It reconnects broken relationship between God, between people, resets our perspective on what God loves and breaks our hearts for what God hates, and reminds us again and again when we tend to forget. And this, to use a great theological term, is Amos's beef with the people of God. This is his beef. that they have separated those two things that were meant to go together. That they think maybe that in their worship, they can get right with God and then kind of not care so much about the other side, about the justice side. The main reason God's people are failing, according to Amos, is because they have disconnected love and justice. Worship of God is not leading to loving their neighbor. They are lopsided at best. And that's pointed out in Amos 5, in the scriptures that lead up to what Chris read for us. In Amos 5:7, he says, "Ah, you that turn justice to wormwood." And that is in scripture a symbol of bitterness, wormwood. It is used for bitters that go into liquor now. But they saw it as a really negative thing at the time. Wormwood representing bitterness. Amos 5:11, "You levy a straw tax on the poor and impose a tax on their grain." Amos 5:12, "There are those who oppress the innocent and take bribes and deprive the poor of justice in the courts." Every once in a while, I get invited to pray over Law Day in Warren County. Anybody ever been to Law Day? So those of you who are lawyers or those of you who thought it would be a good thing to go to, it's a gathering to kind of hold up the power of our justice system, our legal system, and to call us to the highest standards of that. And I've prayed at that twice. And the first time I went, I didn't know what I was getting into, and it was a great day, but I kind of like, what do you pray at that kind of thing? What should a pastor go in and say over a group of lawyers and judges? You know, you might have thoughts. I had some thoughts. And I just wanted to bless them in every way. You knew there was a lawyer joke in there somewhere, didn't you? The second time I went back, I looked at that prayer, and I'm like, okay, how do we do this better than the last time? And I realized the first time I had prayed for us, you know, kind of to do well, to bless all that was going well, the ways that we were bringing justice in the world, and to call for that and raise that up. So the second time, I just tried to think of the opposite of that too. So like the prayer was something like this: God, for all that brings justice and goodness and wholeness in our world, would you work to raise that up and draw us to it? And for all that threatens justice, for all that tears lives and people apart, for all the forces at work in the world that dehumanize us and counter human flourishing, would you work against that? And I think that's a good prayer for us all the time, to understand how our love for God really does relate to our love of neighbor. And Amos' deal is that they're not doing that. So he says, "Enough with your festivals, your worship rituals." And it's not that he has a problem with worship itself. He has a problem with the disconnect. Not because worship is bad, but because true worship must be linked to something else. And so he says, enough with going up to the hills and trying to connect with God there when you won't help those down in the valley and to connect with people there. He says, don't sing songs of worship and then live lives of abuse and exploitation. Amos is saying you can't worship your way out of your responsibilities and your relationships. I think of, as I was thinking of that, kind of how we might do that, I've thought of a friend that I had in college who I affectionately refer to as Grand Gesture Guy, because he was always finding and asking for help in getting some kind of grand gesture to win his girlfriend back. Now, there are two ways to be romantic, right? One is to be proactive about this and to think of what you can do to, you know, just bring joy and happiness to your significant other and to do romantic things for no reason. Or there's his way, which was to wait until you mess up and then try to fix it. And so he was always coming to us. He was coming to a bunch of other college-age guys trying to figure out how to be in a relationship with his girlfriend. It didn't end well. And what he would do was he would mess up. And sometimes I think he messed up big, and he would need to fix it. So he would ask us things to do. And so one time he sang outside of her window, her dorm room window. And one time he said, I smothered her with flowers. And at near the end, he came to us and said, I need help. I need the best makeup song that you've ever heard. And he pulled the guys, and then he made a mixed tape and gave it to her. But you know where this is going. Eventually, his girlfriend, who was no dummy, realized that there ain't enough mixtapes in the world to change this pattern. There's no grand gesture that's gonna fix the thing that was really going on, which was the injustice of his messing up. And so Amos says to grand gesture people, you can't worship your way out of this. There has to be a connection between what you're saying to me and what you're doing to each other. This week, we had some churches come in and talk to us about children's ministry. And I'd like to think it's because we do children's and youth ministry well. But we always enter those conversations ready to learn something because we've got a lot to learn still. So we were talking to a couple churches, spent the day with them. We sat down with our preschool here, our preschool people, our kids' own people, our youth people. And I was there sort of as a host and MC trying to listen. And I heard as Donna Bean was talking about our Kids Zone ministry, and especially as we think about the babies that we've celebrated today, that commitment we have to children and families. And the way that our program is set up, the way our system is set up, and you may or may not know this, but we have 36 virtues that we teach our children in Kids Zone. They focus on them for a month at a time, and then the next month is another one. There's a very succinct way of describing that virtue. Like last week, it was patience, and the kids were coming out to the fish fry with a cup full of dirt. And I'm like, are you all eating that? What? I'm like, I thought we were having better food than that. I didn't know exactly what was going on. And I said, is that dirt? And one of the kids said, no, it's a plant. I'm like, looks like dirt to me. But they had gotten it because the virtue was patience, and he was willing to wait until that dirt became the plant that had been planted by a seed. So we do this, we have 36 of them, so it's on a three-year cycle. We teach them each virtue for a month for 3 years, and then the idea is that they get it once as a young child, and if they go all the way through, then they get it a second time as an older child to reinforce that virtue. And I knew that, my kids have been through that pretty much. My youngest is getting ready to graduate from Kids Zone. And so I've heard this before. But then as Donna described that, she said something that I had never heard before. And she said, here's how we describe those virtues, those 36 virtues, to the kids. We say, that is something going on the inside that changes the world on the outside. Wow. Felt to me like if you've ever been to church where there's a children's sermon, right, when the pastor is speaking to the kids or somebody's speaking to the kids and they say something at a level that you can understand and the adults get more out of that than when the pastor just kind of goes on and on and on and on and on and on. In some other churches, I hear that happens. Something going on the inside that changes the world on the outside. This is the call of God to the church. In all times, in all places, for the work of God in us to be so powerful that it's transformative to other people. Maybe to people we would never even meet. In some system that brings the forces together that are bringing the world together in union with one another, in synergy with one another, in the power of God, in the spiritual force that we would call the church, that works against all those forces that we notice and recognize and get concerned about that are trying to tear us and the world apart. Our main opportunity as the church and as the people of God, or as just in people, as people in general, is to have this thing going on in us where God is putting us back together in such a powerful way that together as a community, we become a putting back together force in the world. I think in recognizing that vision, we must confess that we haven't always done it. That we've, as a church, failed to hear this call from God. And in a series on calling, we want to recognize the ways that we have misheard or failed to hear or haven't responded. I think as the people of God, we have not always answered this call to justice. And there are some reasons why, some ways that we've tend to miss it. One is that I think we've sometimes focused on our little world in the church so much that we fail to recognize that there's a world outside of us. And this is sort of just how sociology works. It's how groups work. We kind of figure out who we are. We sort of set boundaries, who's in, who's out. And then we create our kind of our own little world. We have our own stuff going on. We have maybe good stuff going on, but we're kind of focused on us. And then we kind of get overwhelmed with our own stuff and our own system and maybe our own power and control issues. And we fail to have a way of seeing outside of it. And so sometimes we miss the world going on around us. And by world, we can very easily mean the very people living right outside our doors, the neighborhood surrounding a church. One of the dynamics of church is this, that sometimes people come to that and the neighborhood changes. And so then people drive in, but none of those people are the people who live right around the church. And then there's a growing disconnect between the people inside the walls and the people outside the walls. So there's always this need to counter that, for us to raise our awareness of what is going on right outside of our doors and with our very neighbors. Sadly, I think the church has missed this call to justice as it has gotten caught up in the injustices of the world around it, in the society around us, that we fail to hear the distinctiveness of what it means to be God's people, just as the prophet Amos spoke to. And so the isms creep in, they walk in the door with us. Racism, sexism, materialism, is just part of what we must work against as well. Beth Moore spoke to this week, and if you know who Beth Moore is and haven't heard her speak to the sexism in the church, she spoke to that this week in a way that was powerful. And there's great power in us recognizing that. And then instead of being, you know, sort of defensive about it, recognize this is inherent to what it means to be human, that we bring these things with us, and we just need to be praying for God's justice to raise up and for the injustice to go down in our own lives. Mostly, I think the church has sometimes missed the call to justice by limiting its focus to acceptable forms of social engagement, meaning we can kind of throw money at a problem or kind of do a fundraiser for an issue. We can give to a canned food drive, maybe is a great example, to people in poverty, and give aid to the poor, but then avoid the tougher and sometimes more challenging and controversial questions about why there's poverty in the first place. And so to sort of just not get down to the root causes. Desmond Tutu in South Africa said this, at some point you gotta stop pulling people from the river and go upstream and figure out who's throwing them in the first place. And so I wanna be a part of a people who are doing that. And I think you probably do too. I think that's good part of why you are here, that you want to hear God calling us to be this kind of people. And so I wanted to invite some people who are doing that forward. I'm going to invite Jessica Massey and Wendell Van Valen and Seth Alexander, and they're going to come talk to us for just a second about how we are doing this as a church, or some ministries that we are connected to that are working to change things from the bottom up and to go upriver a little bit. And so Jessica is here representing Little Angels Attic, a ministry we've had for how long now, Jessica? 20 years. I should not have put you on the spot. That was not one of the pre-approved questions, sorry. A ministry that we sell gently used clothing and items for children and mothers and kids' stuff, and then we use that to impact our community. Seth Alexander, who represents our Honduras ministry, and we've been going for about 10 years or so in our partnership with Ashley and Justin Guest, who are back here. Hey, Ashley and Justin. And we had the fish fry for last week. And then Wendell Van Valen, who represents Broadway in a lot of different ways, but has been active in our recovery ministry here. And so you all represent various ways in which we're trying to put things back together. So let me just ask you to sort of describe fairly quickly what you do. Like, what is your ministry? How do you see what you do and how it matters?
Shop for gently used high quality clothing. And you know, a lot of our families, not all of our population, but a lot of them are clothing their families for the entire year based on one sale. But beyond that, we are able to go outside Broadway's walls. And our end users of the ministry are charities here in Bowling Green and Warren County. And joining this ministry has really been life-changing for me, because I think that Little Angels Attic has an opportunity to provide an awareness about what is going on in the community. Right. And I really want us to be the facilitator of that conversation. I didn't know until I joined Little Angels Attic that just some of the issues that face our community. I didn't know that there were 1,200 kids in the Warren County school system that go hungry on the weekends. I didn't know that the Child Advocacy Center helps 640 sexually abused kids a year. You know, and I really think that as Little Angels Attic, we have a platform to bring awareness to those issues. And obviously, you know, we're able to help. We raise about $50,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's a significant contribution.
Absolutely.
But I really want us to be the facilitators of those conversations to bring awareness to what's happening in our community.
Thank you for that. Let's celebrate that and the work of a Little Angels Attic. And Jessica, part of what has raised that awareness for you is like you don't just send it. You're getting ready to talk. But you guys go, right, and you go and present a check and enter into conversation. So like the going to, and yeah, okay, she is going to get it back. Yes, get you started again.
Right. You know, we go to the International Center. We visit with Jennifer Bryan at the Child Advocacy Center. And that was just mind-blowing to me. You know, you think of this as a big city issue.
Right.
It's happening all around us.
We're talking about child abuse and sexual abuse.
Child abuse and sexual abuse. Yeah. And so when we walk the halls of the Child Advocacy Center, we see that Little Angels Attic and Broadway's names are on 3 or 4 of their interview rooms, the safe spaces for these kids where they can go in and they can talk with professionals. And Jennifer and her staff are able to get to the bottom of what is happening with this kid. And, you know, Little Angels Attic is right there on the walls every time she interviews a child. It's extremely impactful. So.
I'm glad we let you talk again. Thank you for that. Seth, you represent a sort of, now go out to the global, you know, this is in our neighborhood, like a global ministry with our Broadway Abroad ministry. And so tell us about what we do in Honduras.
Yeah, so Broadway Abroad Missions, we actually started that about 4 years ago, but it grew out of our work with the guests, which goes back to 2012 when we sent our first team down to Manuelito Project, where they've been serving for the past 8, 9 years, something like that. So that's kind of where it got its start. It kind of grew out of that. But we were intentional about choosing a name that wasn't specific to Honduras, but more broad. So there's potential for other missionaries to come under our umbrella at some point. We want to support those folks as well.
So what do we do in Honduras?
There's really kind of two parts. There's what we've been doing, which up until last year, the guests were at Manuelito Project. You guys have probably heard us talk about the street kids that were living there, the 40 kids from the street. There's a school that they also have for the kids from the town. There's about 70 kids from the town there that come in. It's a free education for them. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't afford public school. There's a lot of cost involved with public school, uniforms and desk rentals. So we're talking about families that live on less than $5 a day. Without the school there, right. They wouldn't have help. So we would go down and support them once a year with a mission team. But I think more important than that, and sort of how BAM grew out of that, is we saw a need for things to do from the home front, too, to support them as well. Because if we're just going to build stuff, we may as well just send them the money and let them do it themselves, because they're going to get more skilled, you know, qualified. Me with a hammer is, you know, not that great. The fact that we go and we see and we listen, we come back, that's how the school meal program
stories.
Got started.
We heard a reality there, and then we spoke to that here, and it, you know, people got around it. And so much of what happens with the Honduras ministry, most of it is lay people who just are passionate about what God is doing there and are organized and excited about it and go down there.
And then we've got a new ministry that the guests will be starting in Roatan, which is an island on the northern coast. Different issues. It's not really a school type situation like what we've been doing, but a lot of broken families, a high rate of HIV AIDS, a lot of things, more of a community type outreach. We've been calling it like the Foundry South, homework help, things like that they'll be doing. And so we've got 20 people going down this July to go there for the first time. It'll actually be the first church to go to that ministry. The guests are going down with us to give us a little sneak peek. And someone else on the stage is going with me this year, I think.
I heard that. Is it you? And it's not you, so must be me, huh?
We're excited to have Pastor Adam join us this year.
I need to practice my Spanish. Wendell, you're going to back clean up here for us.
All right.
Your work is sort of far-reaching in another way, and the way God is putting us back together through a way of sort of orienting our whole lives toward Him. So kind of just talk to us about how we do recovery here at Broadway.
Actually, we're not to correct you.
Right. It's okay.
we're not calling ourselves.
How do we do health here at Broadway?
Yeah, there you go. We're not so much calling ourselves a recovery ministry anymore. We're a ministry for the healing of human hurts. Hmm. Because we started out as Celebrate Recovery, and it was aimed at drug addiction and alcoholism. And we find that we really have people bleeding out all different ways. Divorce, loss of a loved one, medical crisis in the family, depression, anxiety, you know, just human hurts. Mm-hmm. And so we're a ministry to help people find wholeness in their brokenness. And over time, we've come up with two core values. That's it. And that is be authentic and be loved. And so you just come and you, because our brokenness is not broken concepts. It's broken relationships. We have a broken relationship with ourselves. We have a broken relationship with God. Many people who come have been abused by churches. So they come and they say, I suffer from religious abuse. Well, that skews their relationship with God. So we help mend that. And, of course, they have brokenness in their relationships with each other. So those are not conceptual issues. That's a relational issue. Right. And so what we've discovered over time, we've kind of evolved and learned as we've gone along. It's group wisdom that we've just discussed in the last 12, 13 years. But the way to find healing is to talk it out. And so we've created a place or kind of evolved into a place that's a safe place to come and tell your story.
Right.
And nobody's forced to tell anything. But when you want to, you find an individual, small group, or the whole body, and you tell parts of your story. And over time, you find healing.
Right.
There's no
magic formula.
No. You just come and be real.
Uh-huh.
And then you let us love you. Right. Most people think if they're real, they'll be rejected. And we found a place. I mean, I stood on this platform early on in Celebrate Recovery and introduced myself for the first time honestly and shuddered inside because I thought that was it. That's it. I'm going to be asked to leave. Mm-hmm. And I was just embraced. And I thought, yeah.
And out of that faithfulness and sort of what we said earlier, as people have come to do the very same thing, the ripples have been pretty far-reaching. So we've applied the process now to, as you said, all kinds of different things, including our partnership with the human trafficking with Phoenix Rising. Can I just speak to kind of what that has happened with that curriculum?
They had several of their, Azure D had several conferences here. And the first conference they had a lineup of survivors, and dumb me sitting about three rows back said, well, have you tried the 12-step approach? They attacked me. And I went back to Azure D and I said, what was that? And so she explained it to me. I won't go into that. So I said, okay, I'm going to write some camouflage 12-step material and sneak it in and see what it does. It's all over the world now, literally all over the world. Azure D's helped me write two recovery books for human traffic survivors. And when we were done, I said, it's yours. The only thing I ask of you is to tell me when you get a report back,
Right.
And so she sends me reports. It's unbelievable. It's all over the world.
Right.
So little old Broadway.
Well, thank you all for being examples of the thing that we were talking about today. I gave you three questions. We got one in, but that's you nailed it on the first try. So let's thank them. Thank you. Thanks, guys. All right, we're running long. So if you need to get your kids or somebody send a message to Kids Zone, we're going to be just a few more minutes, and they can get to me later. But let's finish in communion today. I'm going to invite those who are coming to serve forward because we need to seal this moment in the redemptive work of God through Jesus. And we believe that Jesus came to a broken world, became broken himself, so that God through him could heal it. And we bring our lives before him in faith week in and week out, or maybe today for the first time, maybe today in a renewed sense that this is possible. We come in hope that God is doing this work in us and in the world. And so we prepare to receive that as a gift of grace from God through the symbols of that sacrifice in his body and in his blood. We do that by taking a piece of the bread, we break it off and then dip it into the cup and then eat it. And then just recognize that God is at work, that Jesus is present in that moment. And so we have three stations here in the front and two in the back. And I would invite you in the name of Jesus to come as we do, as we hear that call. Let's pray together. God, we're thankful for your work in our lives and in the world. We come and maybe perhaps renewed hope and faith for people young and old, for the little children that we've celebrated today, and for those of us in a very different phase of life, for people here and people far and everyone in between, that you are putting the world back together, and that somehow we are being caught up in it, in this work of redemption. May this moment here with you symbolize that and powerfully represent it to us in the bread and in the cup as they draw us to your great love for us in Jesus Christ our Lord.